It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. When you think about an environmentally friendly car, you might think of an electric vehicle, but it's not always quite that simple. A new report from the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy finds that this year's greenest car in America, as they rate it, is actually a plug-in hybrid, the 2024 Prius Prime SE. An expert on the automotive industry is with us now to help compare the environmental impacts of gas, electric, hybrid, and plug-in hybrid cars. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have an electric, a hybrid, or plug-in hybrid car? What do you like about it? What led you to make that decision? If you've been thinking about taking the plunge but haven't yet, what has been holding you back so far? If you sell cars, what are you seeing when it comes to trends and what your customers want? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Micheline Maynard is a journalist and broadcaster based in Michigan with a long career in public radio along the way. She's the author of the book The End of Detroit, How the Big Three Lost Their Grip on the American Car Market. And she has a Substack newsletter called Intersection, Everything That Moves. Mickey, welcome back to Central Time.
Hey, Rob, I'm so happy to be back with you.
Well, as I mentioned, this one report says, hey, our greenest car, it's a plug-in hybrid. For people who haven't looked into these vehicles, what's the difference between a hybrid and a plug-in hybrid? It's right there in the name, I guess.
Exactly. So I have a Prius. It's my second Prius. And I have a little bit of experience with the hybrid. So a hybrid has a gasoline engine and a battery. Now, most of the time I run my Prius on gasoline and I get about 50 miles to the gallon, which is pretty great. But if I'm idling, if I'm going downhill, if I take my foot off the accelerator, it'll switch over to the battery. So I have battery power and I could hit a little button on my dashboard and run it only on the battery. It's not going to get me very far. That is the main issue. The battery is meant to boost the vehicle, but not run the vehicle. Mm-hmm. So then you have plug-in hybrids, and the plug-ins have bigger batteries that can hold more of a charge, which can get you places that probably the battery on my Prius can't get you. And the advantage to that is that you plug it in overnight and charge it up, and then you have kind of this dual feeling of power that you can drive on your gasoline engine or you can drive on your battery as well.
Now, when we ask a question like what car is the greenest, I assume it's going to depend in some ways on how we weigh different variables. But what kind of factors go into evaluating pollution emissions that come from different makes and models and types of cars?
So the acronym to know is ZEV, ZEV, which is zero emission vehicles. And so electric cars are zero emission vehicles because they don't emit carbon dioxide. Now, this is going to get a little bit in the weeds, but so you have your ZEVs, and then you have vehicles that are low emissions vehicles, which are what hybrids and plug-in hybrids are. And that's basically the point here is that the idea is to get rid of hydrocarbons and, you know, avoid polluting the air. And so if you want to do it in the purest fashion, you would do it with an electric vehicle. But you still have to build the electric vehicle. And there are people in the environmental movement who would say the idea isn't vehicles that don't pollute. It's not to have vehicles at all.
Another factor that I think this report I mentioned was weighing, the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, they're saying, well, hang on, where is the electricity coming from? And for a lot of states, like Wisconsin, a decent amount of that comes from coal power plants. So they're trying to weigh, okay, if we're plugging in, what is the source of it? How much emission goes into that? Is that something that people you've seen, Mickey, try to factor in here?
Oh, absolutely. So coal powered, and then there are a lot of people that are saying, you know, as scary as nuclear power can seem, nuclear power is also fairly green, even though it's scary. So the coal powered plants, the nuclear powered plants, you could say that hydroelectric power is probably the cleanest of all of them, since it's water and water, you know, producing electricity. And that is a factor that a lot of people look at. And the grid is a huge issue because it's not going to only be individual cars and trucks and SUVs that'll be drawing on the grid. There is a real movement to decarbonize heavy trucks. So the, you know, the 18 wheelers and the big rigs that travel across the country. And California wants to have everything on its roads be zero emissions by 2050. And one of the ways that you decarbonize those big heavy trucks is by electrifying them. But boy, it's going to take a lot of electricity to charge a big truck versus, you know, my little sports car.
Talking to Mickey Maynard, longtime automotive reporter, looking at how we measure the environmental impact of different types of vehicles. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, the decisions you've made. If you've made a recent auto purchase, join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Eric is with us on the line in Endeavor. Eric, what did you want to share with us?
Well, I want to say one thing before I get to my point, but hydroelectrics, as the cleanest, unless you're a fish or the environment or a river, around the environment around the river. But we bought a hybrid car in about 4 or 5 years ago. It's a Toyota Avalon. It's very comfortable. We get 39 highway, 40 city. I cannot imagine buying another non-hybrid car at this point. Mm-hmm.
And Eric, have you thought about an EV, like going full electric, or is hybrid your sweet spot?
Right now, hybrid is a sweet spot because, I mean, we can go 500 miles on a gas tank of gas, and it's unbelievable the gas mileage it gets. Plus, because they're on leather seats, it's very comfortable. But I'm not afraid of electric vehicles. I haven't decided that yet.
Gotcha. Eric, thanks a lot for calling in and sharing your experience. Mickey, what are we seeing with trends when it comes to consumer preferences? Are people going hybrid like Eric? How are EVs doing? What is happening on car lots around the country?
So I just want to address his point about hydroelectric power, and I totally understand what he's saying. You know, we don't want to ruin one environment to help another one. And I think you would have to look at that very carefully if we were going to go to that in a big way. So I think it's kind of delightful because in the last 20 years, so the Toyota Prius went on sale in the United States in 1999 and in Japan, I think, in 1996. And we've sold, I think they've sold 3 million hybrids. Toyota alone has sold 3 million hybrids. There are a lot of people who scoff at hybrids because their sales track gasoline prices. So when gasoline is under $2 a gallon, nobody cares about buying a hybrid, but gasoline is creeping up again. So we've got sort of these twin factors of gas prices are getting more expensive, and states and even the federal government are mandating cleaner vehicles. And instead of hybrids being something that you sort of scoff at, hybrids might be the answer. The technology exists. Toyota talks about electrifying its lineup, not electric vehicles, but hybrid electrics. The Camry will be only available as a hybrid, I believe, after the next model year. So I think this might be hybrid's time in the spotlight.
And I keep seeing things about, okay, yes, EV, full electric vehicle sales have gone up, but car lots now are kind of stacking them up and not sure what to do with them. What's been happening? Why has... go ahead.
Here's one of the issues with EVs. EV technology is moving very, very rapidly. And so an EV that you bought 2 years ago or leased 2 years ago and an EV that you leased 4 years ago are already outdated. And that's one of the reasons why EVs have piled up on lots and why one of the reasons why Hertz decided that it would get rid of 20,000 EVs. The technology is just changing so fast. You know, it's like the VCR Betamax thing way back when. And now we watch videos on our phone, you know. So that's one of the issues with EVs as well. It's, you know, the technology is really interesting technology. But I'll tell you one thing that's happening in China. There are a couple of Chinese EV manufacturers that allow you to swap the batteries. So there's a super cheap one that you can buy that's only about $2,500, but it doesn't come with the battery. Then you lease the battery and you basically tell them, oh, I drive 30 miles a day and you only need a battery that's this powerful. oh, I drive, you know, 100 mile a day commute, then you're going to want a battery that's that powerful. And then when you need a new battery, you just drive in and they swap it out and they give you a new battery. So there's no charging. You just go get a new battery. We don't have anything like that yet, but that is where the, at least in Asia, where the market is headed.
Micheline Maynard is with us, journalist, author, automotive industry expert, looking at the environmental impacts of hybrid, plug-in hybrid, and electric cars, how they stack up against old-fashioned gas cars, how to know what's right for you. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you hesitant when it comes to electric and or hybrid vehicles, or have you made the switch yourself? What's your experience been like? What questions do you have? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with journalist, author, and automotive industry expert Micheline Maynard. We're comparing the environmental impacts of electric, hybrid, and plug-in hybrid cars, how green they are compared to gas cars, and how to decide what's right for you. You could join in with your questions or to share your experiences, maybe if you bought a car recently, at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Kathy is with us in Middleton. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I am all for the environment. Trust me, but what I'm going to say may not sound that way. I am more concerned about my pocketbook. When I'm watching David Muir on TV at night and they talk about how the price of gas is going up and up or down and down or whatever, I think, oh, okay, that's what I have to live with. But nobody ever says what it costs to run an electric vehicle. Why don't they do that? And how much does it cost? How does it compare?
Kathy, thanks for the call. Mickey, how do we compare and contrast?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it depends on your electrical uses. And this is one of the things that is a little bit hard to quantify on EVs because, you know, if you live in a 6-bedroom house with 4 garages, you're probably already drawing on the grid pretty significantly. You might not even notice what your car is drawing because you have all this other electrical use. By contrast, if you live in a 1-bedroom apartment in New York City, and I actually do know people in New York City who run extension cords out the window so they can charge their car on their home grid, you might see a significant increase in the amount of electricity that you use simply because you don't use a lot of electricity to begin with. So at this point in time, people that I know who have owned electric vehicles say that the savings on gasoline, you know, so if gas is $4 a gallon, the amount that they save on gasoline versus the use of electricity, there's no question that electricity is much cheaper for these people. But right now, it's very, very hard to say what the average is going to be for everybody because it depends on your draw of the grid in other ways.
Thanks a lot for the call, Kathy. David joins us now in Madison. David, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a new EV owner at the start of this year, and so far I absolutely love it. It's the most quiet car I've ever owned. You know, and one of the issues I understand there is range anxiety. People don't buy because of range anxiety. Well, my 17-year-old car that pretty much died, we had range anxiety with that. So we had always just rented a car if we had to go super long distances. And that's what we're doing now with our EV. And then I guess the only other thing I would say is that we did choose to lease, which we never do. We usually buy. And one of the reasons was we thought the technology in 3 years could change dramatically.
Interesting.
And we probably didn't want to own that car.
David, thanks a lot for the call. Okay, a lot there, Mickey. Let's start with the range anxiety. David had a solution there. How big a factor is that still?
So range anxiety, it isn't so much range anxiety, how far the car can go. It's charging anxiety. Will you be able to charge the vehicle? So let me give you an example. If you look at our Midwest, most of the chargers are in urban, suburban, and college towns. For example, in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, there are hardly any chargers. There are some, at Northern Michigan and Michigan Tech University. But otherwise, you know, the whole UP has a handful of chargers. Now, this is the big issue, and this was supposed to be addressed in the infrastructure bill. The Biden administration is supposed to be spending millions of dollars setting up more chargers, but Politico reported last year that not a single charger had been set up. So charging anxiety is an issue. Obsolete technology is obviously an issue. And I think leasing an electric vehicle is probably the way to go, because it's all changing very rapidly. And Toyota is even looking at a different kind of battery than everybody else is using. And so you don't want to be stuck with the old battery when the new battery comes in and turns out to be much more efficient. And I did want to get back to Kathy's point about charging. So there is one study that shows it costs about $50 a month to charge a basic electric car, not, you know, one of the big pickup trucks, versus maybe $130 a month if you have a regular commute. So there is a great savings potential, but it also, as I said, depends on how much you use electricity and what your bill is anyway.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Micheline Maynard, longtime automotive industry reporter, about how we compare and contrast the greenness, the environmental value of hybrid, plug-in hybrid electric vehicles. Still time for your call at 800-642-1234. Mickey, before we go back to our callers, you'd mentioned, you know, some of the state-of-the-art in China right now. One issue here in the U.S. is we've got dueling priorities from the Biden administration. They want to promote more electric vehicles. They don't want to promote imports from China, which has been a leader in EVs right now. How is all that shaking out?
Yeah, so a couple of weeks ago, President Biden kind of inexplicably tweeted and put on social media that we're not going to allow the Chinese to flood the American market with EVs. Well, no, we're not, because the Trump administration placed a 27.5% tariff on imported Chinese EVs. So first of all, the Chinese would have to look at the American market and say, you know, is it worth having to lose 27.5% of our profit or whatever by sending vehicles there? But I do think the Chinese are clearly the leaders in electric vehicles. The government there in 2010 really promoted the idea of EVs, and 300 different brands jumped into the market and started duking it out for customers. There are about 100 brands left that sell EVs, and about 30 of them are the super competitors. The biggest one is BYD, or Build Your Dream, and BYD is the company that I'm watching the most closely. You know, they're the Toyota of electric vehicles in China. They have their own fleet of freighters. They recently sent their first freighter to Denmark and England. And a friend of mine tweeted the other night a photo of the first BYD in London. So BYD has 7 more freighters that it can fill up and send vehicles around the world. So I would be willing to predict that we'll see them in the United States someday.
Let's go back to our callers. Mitch is on the line in Green Bay. Mitch, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was a truck driver in the 90s, and I was on the route of a big electric car race. It was put on by either Mechanics Illustrated or Popular Science, and they had a lot of schools participating, MIT and other engineering schools. And I got to watch the racers come by me, very silent and very interesting, in that they made all of their own electricity. And they were not battery powered. They were not on the grid and everything else. And I'm wondering just
where
that's going.
Did they have solar panels, Mitch, or what were they doing?
Sounds like a solar race. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Is there any industrial application for that? Will we see consumer cars with some of their own solar producing energy, Mickey?
We might see solar as a contributor. I don't think you're going to be able to run an American sized sedan or SUV on solar in the near future, but you know, there are some solar panels built into sunroofs, and you might be able to run accessories on the dashboard that way. So, no, never rule anything out. The way technology is going, you know, we could see solar washing machines.
Mitch, thanks a lot for the call. Matthew is with us now in Madison. Matthew, hi.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I've owned electric vehicles for 8 years now. I started with a plug-in hybrid, the Chevy Volt, and we still have it. And then a few years later, we got a Tesla Model S used. And at the used price, we could afford it. And then to make it affordable, I was renting them out through Turo. I'm not doing that anymore. But so that's kind of been a little bit of my story. And the piece that I wanted to share is how much fun they are to drive.
Interesting, Matthew. Thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, we haven't talked about that yet, Mickey. Are these plug-in hybrids, et cetera, fun to drive?
Oh, absolutely. I have ridden in Tesla taxis, you know, Lyfts and Ubers, and I'm there a blast. And the I mean, he had a Model S, and the Model S is, you know, really pretty high powered. I think they're fun to drive. They're very quiet. And that's one of those things that scares people, is that they just kind of show up behind you and you don't know that they're there. But yeah, and I think if we get some serious competition for Tesla in this country, the electric vehicle market in the next decade could be very, very interesting. I don't know if the Detroit company's hearts are really in it, because they make so much money on pickups and SUVs, and electric vehicles will be a drag on their results for several years going forward. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see imports and Tesla taking the leadership on EVs and Detroit kind of doing what they feel they have to do.
Thanks for that call. And Mickey, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And thanks to everybody who called in.
That's Micheline Maynard, journalist and broadcaster. She's the author of the book, The End of Detroit, How the Big Three Lost Their Grip on the American Car Market. She has a Substack newsletter. It's called Intersection, Everything That Moves. She was with us today to talk about the environmental impacts of gas, electric, hybrid, and plug-in hybrid cars, how to decide which car might be best for you. I'm Rob Ferret. Stick around. There's more to come on Central Time. You're listening to The Ideas Network.